show that you've ever been in. It's the Cozy Zone.
Cozy Zone.
It's the Cozy Zone that you've ever been in. It's the Cozy Zone. It's the
Cozy Zone.
Hello, Cozy Zonesters. This is Ben Weber coming at you from my kitchen in Brooklyn, New York. I'm very excited to bring you episode 5, Dorna Lang in her treehouse bed. I'm in my kitchen right now. I'm looking at a poster we have, Descriptores Aromáticos, 54 de los más de 150 aromas y sabores que pueden percibirse en el vino. Forgive me, I don't speak Spanish, but what this poster is these lovely pictures of wine, wine glasses. And in the wine glasses, there are all of these different photographic representations of scents and flavors that you can find in wine. So humo, smoke, limón, lemon, manteca, butter, moras, raspberries, miel, honey, roble, bark or leaves, tabaco, trufas, I don't know, maybe truffles, I have no idea, vanilla, piedras, stone, pan tostado, toasted bread. All of these would be delicious in a wine. I love this poster. This is our roommate Alana's poster. It is front and center on our purple wall. I'm looking at we have a credenza here, atop which sits a soda stream. We have 5 different sake glasses with a little bit of lavender seed in them. And we have a habit of keeping the tea tags from all of our yogi teas, and we put them in a little glass candle holder. We must have 100 or so at this point. And I have picked out 5 of them in honor of the 5th episode of Cozy Zone with Ben Weber. And I would like to share them with you today. So Yogi Tea tells us to speak the truth, act, don't react. A relaxed mind is a creative mind. May the peace of inner self bring us joy. And finally, empty yourself and let the universe fill you. These are all very wonderful meditations to be attached to a very delicious tea that I enjoy. I'm actually drinking a cup of my favorite honey lavender tea right now. Yeah, I love our little kitchen. We're pretty good about doing the dishes. There's some that are still here this morning. Nicolette has been making this chocolate oatmeal that she's very proud of. I have yet to taste it, but it looks great. There are some remnants of the chocolate oatmeal. Daryl is standing guard by the doorway of our kitchen. Our refrigerator is covered with all sorts of cards from loved ones. There's one that's really nice. There's Minnesota hugging Wisconsin, sent to me by my pal Joe. Thanks, Joe. To Nicolette from Quinton in San Diego. Save the date for Danny and Renata's wedding. Can't wait. Friends, I met Dorna Lang on Governor's Island during Figment. I was doing Smash Type, and she happened to come up to my little installation, my stamping installation, with her friend Elena, and I got to know her a little bit then. And then I had the pleasure of going over to her house for a dinner party where I convinced her that she should do Cozy Zone, even after, you know, knowing me for mere minutes. Not even an entire hour, I would say. And she did, and she invited me into her gorgeous home into her beautiful, cozy room, and we have an amazing conversation. She is a very interesting, generous, thoughtful, curious, insightful person, and I know you're really going to love the conversation, so get ready. Talk to me, everybody. Please make some comments on the website, benweberprojects.com. Click on Cozy Zone. Yeah, write a comment. Still getting a lot of spam comments from people who think my website could use some more traffic. I would love some real human beings commenting on my website. Send me an email, ben@smashtype.com. Tweet at me, @BenJewEber, BenJewEber. That's on Twitter. Instagram, Ben Weber Projects. Danny Townsend, thanks for the beautiful music. You're the best. Everybody, please enjoy episode 5 of Cozy Zone, Dorna Lange in her treehouse bed. What are you reading?
This really interesting book. You know Neil Gaiman? Is that how you say his name?
I think so. I've heard Gaiman also.
Gaiman, maybe it's Gaiman.
Gaiman.
But I thought of him more as like writing books for adults. And then this is like this very instructions. Everything you'll need to know in your journey. This like very far out like book of like life wisdom. Trust ghosts. Trust those who have helped you. To help you in their turn. Trust dreams, trust your heart, trust your story. When you come back, return the way you came. Favors will be returned.
That page is like really moving. The page about trusting your story and trusting dreams. Trust ghosts.
I mean, you're right? So,
do you believe in ghosts?
Ride the wise eagle.
You shall not fall.
I'm like, it feels like someone did like a, you know, ayahuasca went on an ayahuasca trip, and maybe they did. Maybe that's what the story is.
So I'm gonna climb up here. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Why don't you close the door?
Great.
Just
I will, and I'm tangled here.
Okay.
Double doors.
Double doors. You can see how crooked the house is once you close the doors. I mean, you can see it anyway, but. In particular. I think that's kind of all you get.
That's what we get.
Yeah.
Is it leaning this way?
It's bowed.
Bowed.
So, like, you can see the frame.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I see. All right. So. Yeah. Okay. Do you believe in ghosts?
I have had experiences where I've had something that might be a ghost interact with me.
Where?
When I was sick with pneumonia, when I was probably in maybe fourth grade, I had this experience of interacting with my grandmother who had passed away when I was 6 or 5. And, you know, had this experience where I believe that she was my guardian angel. Mm. I also had a fever of 103.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
You know, there are two minds about that. I think, I don't know, I listened to a podcast where a comedian asks his friends if they believe in ghosts and God. And it makes me think alongside with it. And, I mean, I really believe in like the power of memory and the power of that, you know, our energy sort of lives on in other people. And so I don't know, that story makes a lot of sense. I've also had some like hallucinations from delirium, like from a high fever. But was it just that one instance with your grandmother?
Mm-hmm. It was that one instance.
What did you see?
I saw her floating outside my bedroom window, but not in a threatening way.
No.
Just in a kind of I'm checking in on you kind of way.
And you were, how did you feel when you saw her? I mean, not threatened, but
yeah, like protected,
like she was watching over mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
Wow. When you were in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, what are you? You're like 10?
Sure. Yeah. Ten, yeah. So.
And that's so like, you know, I mean, that's like you're when you're 10, you know it all. I mean, it's not, that's, you're here, you know. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Dorna, I just want to say thank you for inviting me into your cozy zone here.
You're so welcome.
Can you tell us a little bit about where we are right now?
Yes. We are in a rather small bedroom. My childhood home that I had the great fortune to move back into with a number of my friends 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize when I picked this bedroom that I picked it because it was overlooking this beautiful maple tree.
Mm.
And I kind of wanted to feel like I was in a treehouse.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that it is too narrow to fit a double bed frame. It's just the width of a mattress.
Oh.
And so I was decided that I needed to build something. And so I decided to build like something that felt like a treehouse. And the vision was to have it built out of birch wood. And then I realized that that would require something that was like way above my pay grade. And so I ended up just going to Home Depot, getting 2x4s, some plywood, and just creating like a straight up platform.
Yeah.
And then cutting down some birch, little baby birch trees on my parents' property upstate to kind of create like a princessy frame around it. So I could still have the feeling of like being in the forest, left some of those little branches on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at this frame here. They're, you know, these beautiful young birch trees. Are they three separate trees?
Three separate, or actually one of them, the crossbar on the yeah. top is the second half of one of the thicker ones. This bad boy.
Yeah. So I'm looking, yeah. So there's the thick one, and I see also there's this gorgeous fork that's mm-hmm. happening, that where the other half of this tree is resting, it's nestled in.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what I'm drawn to also are these sort of young spindly branches
mm-hmm.
Coming off of this birch tree. And I mean, what looks like buds in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I, you know, when you beckon to the maple tree too, like right now it's covered in this fresh snow. And we have a fire truck, which lets us know we're in Brooklyn. I guess, you know, I don't know what to do with fire trucks. Like I think usually I pretend they're not there, but
mm-hmm.
you know, when there is now an audio imprint of our yeah. time, it's hard to hard to ignore. But it's fading. And now we can pretend we're in the deep woods. I'm seeing like some lawn chairs covered in snow, that like there's so much snow out there.
Mm. Yeah. So this tree is really magical. It obviously right now it's not leafed out because
yeah.
it's still wintertime. Yeah. But in the summertime when it has the canopy, it really, and this window is so big.
Yeah.
You feel like you're in the tree. I mean, like it's like looking out into the canopy. It's really amazing. And this is also north or south facing rather. Mm-hmm. So you get all of this like beautiful sunlight. So like when you don't have the tree leaves, you have like this beautiful sunlight that will like wake you up and be on the bed pretty much from like 9 to 3 or even 4. So it's like perfect napping conditions.
That is so nice. Do you have the occasion to nap? Or have you had the occasion to nap a lot in this room?
Oh, yeah.
And recently?
Not particularly recently, but I have come and sort of just like cat napped or like hung out in the little pool of sunshine.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And how many years have you lived in this room?
Interestingly, I actually only lived in this room for about 9 months.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was just like everything, moving into this house and that year was just a year of like tremendous growth and change. And we joke that this house is the house of changes because so many people have just had their lives turned upside down, including me. And about 9 months into living here, I decided to quit my job and just radically overhaul my life. So I was basically, my brother took me in, and then I was couch surfing for the next like year. So I had to say goodbye to this room, but amazingly, a dear friend was looking to sort of downsize and move from the big room with their former partner into this room.
Wow.
So it was like kind of like perfect timing, actually.
That's amazing. What, yeah. Can you tell me about the job you left and
sure.
And what happened next?
Yeah. It was my third year teaching public school, special education. And I was feeling pretty burned out, but I had just finished my like 2.5 years of going to grad school at night and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, let me give it one more year where I don't have that constraint on my like time and energy of yeah. grad school. And I was moving to a different school that had a pretty decent reputation, like in terms of that the people there cared about the students, like in terms of systemically, like kind of as good as it gets, still all of the issues that come along with like, you know, low-income public school
yeah.
issues.
Where, what
in
neighborhood?
Red Hook. Okay. Or I guess it was sort of like Carroll Gardens, Red Hook
yeah.
border. And it was actually by far my most difficult year teaching. Just like really overcrowded classrooms, just some issues with, you know, I had two of my three co-teachers on maternity or paternity leave for a chunk of the year and had some pretty difficult subs. I just burned out really hard.
Yeah.
And was just like miserable, back to like crying every day. Like I had been my first year of teaching.
Oh, man.
And I was like, I mean, there's, there's this whole thing, like within the sort of unfortunately there's like this sort of like, you know, can you hack it kind of thing
right.
happening
right.
with, you know, within like the teacher community, but also like outside, you know, I didn't want to feel like a quitter or a failure. So there was a lot of that kind of pushing me to keep teaching past the point where I was like being productive or a good teacher. And so I'd pretty much decided to quit, but I was like, I don't like saying quit, but to do something different.
Yeah.
But I was really afraid. I'd applied for a bunch of things and just nothing was really kind of turning up. And I was just feeling more and more desperate because, you know, like living in New York is scary. You have
yeah.
like $1,000 a month in rent
yeah.
plus everything else. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the idea of just quitting my job, like I had a little bit of money saved, but not enough to live for more than a few months. And over the summer, I just finished the school year at the end of June. So it was early July. I had this wonderful talk with my twin brother, who also lives in New York, where I was sharing my fear about quitting my job and basically said, you know, if money were no object, what I would do would be sort of study alternative schools full time. And kind of, I was like, I feel like I've learned a lot about what doesn't work, like the problems, but I haven't learned a lot about what does. I haven't like spent time with solutionaries, like people who are trying to do something different. And he was like, okay, why don't you quit your job and live with me and I'll support you this year. And so I did. We sort of had this one evening where we decided, I shared that and then he offered. And then we sort of started thinking about, you know, he was in grad school at the time and was having a hard time taking care of himself. So I was like, and he has a lot of just like dietary restrictions and stuff. So I was like, okay, I will cook for you. I'll be like your live-in chef and the personal assistant. And that'll give me, you know, free place to stay. And I'll feel like I'm supporting you as well. I'm not just being like a mooch. So that's what we did that school year. And I traveled around a little bit, like basically down to North Carolina, Tennessee, up into Canada, visited like around 60 alternative schools for between like one day and a week. And kind of like felt like I really immersed myself in like the alternative school movement. Went to some conferences and wrote a lot. Had a blogspot. I was like really dating myself
What's your blog? Is it still going?
I haven't updated it this year. It's Dorna Lang.
Dorna Lang.
.blogspot.com.
All right. Dorna Lang.
So that was really, it was a really good feeling to, that was the first and until now, the only time that I've, you know, taken on a long-term, large-scale project and just, like, held myself accountable to, like, writing, you know, a significant amount every week.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of, and I was like, oh, wow, this is what it means to, like, have work, in this case, unpaid, but, like, work a project that I'm, like, really invested in and motivated to work toward.
So I am filled with many different feelings right now for various reasons. So I just want to say on the record here that this is the third time you and I are spending time together. This is the third time we're meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing that you've sort of let me into your space, which is gorgeous. And I mean, I don't know, it reminds me, it's sort of like the birth of a magical fairy ship or something like that. it's something I dream about. Like I dream about living in the forest and having sort of all of these implements of magic around me, which I feel like this room is filled with. When I was listening to you talk about your experience in the education system, I felt myself getting so angry about sort of that system, which is something maybe we can talk about, just about the education system. I work closely with you know, New York City education on the periphery. You know, I work in arts education, and we, you know, my theater goes into schools, and we have teaching artists and things, and but just thinking, hearing you say like that the culture is something that, like, you have to suffer through it, right? It's like you need to have a trial by fire. Like, you won't be able to make it, and, like, you have to hack it, right? That there's not the support systems in place to help you succeed, right? That you need to fight through it. I don't know, just it was extremely disturbing, and it just, to me, sort of speaks to this broken system.
Mm.
I didn't know you had a twin brother. I don't know many things about you. You probably don't know a lot of things about me, as we're strangers, more or less. But there's a connection here, absolutely. So, yeah, I guess I just wanted to disclose that, just tell you where I'm at. And I think this is going good. This is going well so far. And I'm terribly excited. What is it like having a twin brother? I'm an only child, so I don't feel like there's a person in my life who, you know, I could sort of sink into, like you were sort of saying, like, I am going to make this leap of faith and make you delicious food according to your dietary, you know, needs, and also do the thing that I dreamed about, which is, you know, literally going on a road trip and researching alternative schools.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with, what is it like having a twin brother in your life?
It's literally impossible to, more than anyone else, we have sort of shaped each other, you know, so it's impossible to imagine who I would be without him, you know? I mean, I guess you can say the same thing for your parents, right? But kind of on a much more of an ongoing basis now, right? Like, I mean, he single-handedly, like, totally changed the trajectory of my life, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, whereas my parents are, like, they're still a supporting role, but I don't feel like they're continuing to influence me in, like, really major ways. It's definitely, we lived together for almost a full year.
Yeah.
In our late 20s, so, like, we're on really good terms now. It wasn't always that way. You know, I think we had the good fortune to go to a very, like, non-competitive school growing up. So there wasn't so much, you know, the SATs were the first time we had to, like, actually look at compare each other with numbers, which I think is really special, because I think a lot of parents have to deal with, or siblings anyway, have to deal with that.
I never even sort of considered that idea of, like, competition, like, and how lucky it was to, because, I mean, you take your SATs when you're, you know, your late 11th teens, grade. Right?
Yeah, exactly. But even so, I mean, we lived in a really small town, and went to a very small school. Like, my graduating class was 32 or something like that. So Yeah, it was like a lot all the time. And he has a very strong personality, which I think really benefits him now, but he was definitely struggled some socially. And I was sort of like,
what does that look like, a strong personality? Like,
I don't know. I mean, I don't really know how to describe it. He's kind of like a whirlwind of a person, and like very, just like very different from anyone you've ever met.
Okay.
Which again, like, I think that really, he's like wildly successful now.
Yeah.
And people love him, but I think it's hard to be different when you're a kid. Everyone wants to be the same, as close to the same as possible.
Do you see yourself in him? Do you see resonances of your personality in him?
Yeah. I mean, I think, so he was the really outgoing one, you know, for better or for worse. I think that was one of the reasons he struggled socially, was because he was like, you know, pretty far out. And so I grew up partly in reaction to him, you know, where I sort of retreated. And I was like, you know, with the exception of sort of sticking up for him, I like did very little engaging socially. And so like that was sort of my like, you know, blessing and curse, was like being the sort of protector and like extremely like socially conscious one, you know, and that was definitely in reaction to him. And looking, I mean, now, you know, I would like to think that one of my gifts is like being fairly perceptive socially. And I think that that's absolutely due to like the dynamic that we had as kids. And, but then also like, you know, I have like a tremendous amount of like guilt. I mean, I think I'm finally letting go of that, but for, you know, the first half of like our kind of probably until like middle school, I was like more of a bystander to some like pretty serious bullying. And that has like continued to follow me into adulthood of like wanting to like take care of the underdog. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I mean, that definitely shaped me. And I just think at some point guilt and shame is like not the most effective or great motivator, you know?
Totally.
And there was like, you know, for quite honestly, like the reason that I got into teaching special education, that was a large part of it. I was like motivated by like my later waves of like guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And like, and I think if I had had more, I don't know, if I wonder sometimes if I had had more like honest and like positive motivations for getting into that job, if I would have stuck around longer. It's impossible to say.
Yeah. So when did you decide you wanted to go into education?
I think actually after college.
Okay.
I wanted to live abroad, and that's just a really easy way to live abroad, is to teach. So I moved to Brazil.
Brazil.
And yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
I was only there for 6 months just for visa reasons. But it was enough to really enjoy teaching and to have a great experience there. So I was actually teaching little kids. And so when I moved back, I taught preschool for 3 years and then was like, wait, if I teach slightly older kids, I can work 10 months out of the year and get paid twice as much.
Yes. That's fascinating. So little kids is bad money and
no respect to bad money.
Yeah.
And 50 weeks a year.
And it's, I mean, you know, as things are slowly moving in that direction, I mean, that it's identified as the most crucial. It's,
right. These things are changing, thankfully.
Yeah.
And that, so it's not always true, you know?
Yeah.
But in the places where I was working.
Yeah.
It was just, yeah, it was like shot in retrospect. This was my first like real job after, I mean, I had this experience working abroad, but it was temporary. So my first like salaried job, and in retrospect, it was like a tremendously terrible work environment, you know, just like no respect from my bosses either. Like they ran it just as a business, and it was like, how little can I pay you? And how much can I make off of these wealthy families in D.C., you know?
Oh, so you were working in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You went to Grinnell,
right? I did.
Yeah. And so you know my boyhood friends, Paul, Wainwright, yes, and Alan Moskowitz, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And so what did you major in Grinnell?
Psychology.
Okay.
That was, yeah, again, I don't know. I still have some like regrets there. But don't we all?
Of course.
It was one of those things where I had heard from everyone that the department was like not great. And, I had a fantastic intro class, and both of my parents are psychologists.
Yeah. Okay.
And so in my like very small world, it was like, there's a career that two people I know and like really like.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe I'll like that. And then I like the intro course, and I kind of got a really late start. I took like every intro course ever. And so like, I just like needed to make a decision, and yeah, that was what I went with. So.
Interesting.
I still feel like it informs my daily life. Like there's many,
well,
so I appreciate that.
But. Absolutely. I mean, I did not study psychology. My father studied psychology, mm-hmm, and he had a very difficult childhood. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I wonder, my assumption with my father is that, you know, he was trying to ask some questions or sort of, you know, sort of gain some self-knowledge, you know. Mm. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if that was true with you. I mean, it's also your parents were both psychologists too. So that was a sort of a universe that felt, sure, like homey and comfortable, presumably.
Right. And something that, you know, I mean, they didn't ever sort of, I don't think, do anything that they weren't like, you know, that they weren't supposed to do, but sometimes would share like little kinds of stories about former patients.
Yeah.
It's like interesting. And just in general, like when they'd gone to a conference, particularly interesting, yeah, stuff. I'd gone to actually some conferences with them just because I was curious.
Cool.
And so it was something that was taught, my parents talked about over at dinner, and, you know, it was just kind of a part of my childhood. And
yeah,
it's a really interesting way. But like, so yeah, the kind of psychology that they do was like, you know, one part biology for sure.
Okay.
But then also like kind of spirituality, mm, and like sociology, I guess, kind of all like mixed together.
So
and then like
a beautiful this, like open,
yeah,
kind of
very
psychology.
Open.
Yeah.
And then my department, which, and I think this is true of many departments, it was like 100% biology, basically.
Oh.
Like unless this issue can be looked at with like, you know, the scientific method, it's not worth thinking about.
Hmm.
And so like the philosophy kind of side of it was gone. Like anything Freud was not even something we learned even anything about, because it wasn't, you know, a lot of his sort of reasoning is kind of circular.
Yeah. Well, and he's like, not necessarily a scientist.
Might be a repressed memory.
Sure.
Well, I don't have any. That's because it's repressed.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's like you can't really look at these things with the scientific method. So
no.
It just wasn't my jam. Like rats and mazes and slicing open their brains. Like that's not my thing.
Yeah.
So.
But you think about it on a daily basis. I mean, it still stays with you.
Sure.
Yeah.
I really appreciated like understanding some of the cognitive shortcuts that my mind makes. And
yeah,
then, because once you have that knowledge, you can kind of try to correct. So like that kind of thing.
Yeah. God. I am a recent returner to therapy.
Hmm.
And it's really great.
Is it?
I'm really digging it a lot.
I aspire to be. To go back to therapy.
Yeah. Have you, you've been in the past?
Yeah, many times.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I've been, this is my second time, and it's really like, I'm really going for it. Like,
nice.
The last time I went, my therapist was like, okay, you like bring up a lot of deep stuff, like every time you're in here. So if you want to slow down, you can. Like, you know, I don't want you to, I don't know, burnout, I guess, was the sort of the vibe I got. And so that's given me a lot of to think about, of like, how do I pace myself, of like unlocking all of the mishigas that's buried deep in my guts. I don't know. Working on it. So the question is, right, so you studied psychology, you went to teach English in Brazil, and Brazil probably has tons of stories, and mm-hmm, you probably had a lot of adventures. Did you go to the rainforest?
I didn't. So it was interesting. I actually, you know, I was, because my time there was like cut kind of short for a couple of reasons, I really didn't travel at all.
Yeah.
When I was there, I was like living in like a low income area in São Paulo, just like a mega city of 33 million last time I checked, which is kind of, it's kind of unbelievable.
That's a lot.
And then
Tokyo is 30 million, which is nuts.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was 33 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I went to a little beach town for Carnival. I went to Rio for a weekend. And then the last like 2 weeks I traveled kind of up the coast to Bahia, but not all the way to the rainforest.
Okay.
So I need a return trip and do some of that. But it was definitely like Brazil has, you know, there's obviously lots of issues just like we have here, but, really, really beautiful culture, really beautiful people. I mean, I've like the hospitality thing is like really real. Like people are so, my experience, people were like so open and like willing to like engage and connect. And
that's really nice.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if it's rubbed off on you, but like I feel also engaged and connected with here too. Nice. So this is really nice. Yeah.
It was very like informative. And also like a real, you know, like, so for instance, I grew up in a, you know, kind of pick and choose Christian family. Mm-hmm. Like, and then it was not seriously like the word of God is right. And had just had like, was kind of a lack of respect for like really serious, like people who are really serious about their religion. Mm. And that was like in Brazil, there's no such thing as an atheist really. Like everyone is Christian, whether or not they like actually kind of obey the rules, like they identify as Catholic or Christian. And it was my first experience having like dear friends who were like deeply, deeply committed to their religion, and just seeing like the kind of transformational power of religion for some people was really humbling and eye-opening. It was like, it was really just a good, like I was like, oh, this is why cultural immersion is important, you know. Like have a change of perspective and be like, oh my god, you know, stop being such a know-it-all.
Do you have a relationship with Jesus like today?
No.
Do you, I mean, did you, you grew up, I mean, pick and choose, but I mean, you were.
I grew up, yeah, going to church and singing in the choir.
Okay.
It's really, I know, I'm recently aware of how that sounds to people. Like my.
Which part?
The going to church and singing in the choir. Like it sounds like that's kind of like an intensely religious thing. And it was much more like, you know, I grew up in my county was like Republican in upstate county. It's like pretty conservative. And
which county?
Columbia County.
Columbia County.
It's where Hudson is, if you know Hudson.
Mm.
Anyway.
It's like is it on the train?
No. It's on the Amtrak.
Amtrak, okay.
And like the church was like explicitly welcoming to like gay folks. And so that it was sort of like an actual like haven in the county
for
like gay folks. And, you know, the minister would like, didn't marry, but would like bless the union, have like ceremonies for gay folks who wanted to get married. And it was very like, talk about God as a she and, you know, draw on teachings from other religions as well. It was like kind of, it was technically a Presbyterian church, but it really wasn't.
No.
It was like very open.
That's great.
And progressive. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I grew up Reform Jewish in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in Whitefish Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have liked, I don't know, I would have liked more context, I guess, about like where Judaism fell in with other beliefs. It feels like such an old religion, and there's so much dogma and so much stale stuff that I don't know, listening to you talk about your parents or psychology practice about like incorporating spirituality into that, like that's very powerful. Like, I don't know. I think being able to acknowledge your own spirituality in any context, right? Whether it's seeking knowledge, it's seeking psychological knowledge, seeking religious knowledge, is really freeing. And I don't know, for me, like, would give a lot of buy-in. So, like, if you're a religious institution and you want people to, like, join, wouldn't you want to acknowledge their spirituality? And was your church, like, a spiritual, did you, like, I mean, you sang in the choir, which I'm a singer myself and I love to sing, and that's, like, a very spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel spiritually connected to your congregation?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It was unfortunate, like, we had this really amazing pastor for a while who was the reason that kind of, like, drew my family in. And I think he left while I was still, like, kind of too young to, like, really get the sermons.
Mm.
And then we had, like, a very long series of interim pastors and people who, like, weren't so great.
Yeah.
And now just recently have this, like, amazing young pastor who just joined, like, within the last few years, who's, like, incredibly inspiring. And, like,
and so you still have totally, a relationship so with your relationship. Congregation.
But interesting, like, I was, a lot of people kind of stopped coming. And, yeah. Like, just now, like, more young families are joining, some, like, hippie families and stuff. And so it's cool. I'm seeing this, like, real, like, revival, the kind of original spirit of the church. So, you know, it's funny. Like, I just think what I really appreciate about it now, like, in retrospect, was, you know, I just feel like, you know, we don't really have something kind of widespread culturally that, like, replaces the church, which, like, 100 years ago was, like, this place where every week you would have time with, you know, people of, like, all different ages to kind of, like, you know, process some, like, intense stuff in community and probably share a meal, you know, and be able to support the ones who were sick, like, kind of just have an easy way to be like, so-and-so needs, like, casserole every day this week. Like, just a lot of, like, organizing power to take care of this community. And I don't really see that outside of, like, church. Like, I don't see where is a place that I go where I, like, watch, like, babies grow up and old people die and help their families grieve. I don't see something spring up. And it just seems like a shame because as much as I love the folks, like, in my kind of age bracket and feel very connected to them, I really miss like having regular time with, like, much older people or, like, regular time with young people, especially now that I don't teach like the same group. I'm a substitute teacher, so I'm kind of, like, in and out, like, regular time to get to, like, watch kids grow up. Like, that's really special. So that was, like, really powerful. And I don't, you know, if I hadn't have gone to church, I don't think I would have had that experience. And to think that would be sad.
You,
I wouldn't know what I was missing, but, like, it would be sad.
I haven't ever considered that. And that's, like, that's a very big deal hearing you say that. Like, that's an amazing question. Like, that just sort of, let's stay on that question for a second of, like, where can that happen? Because I want that too. Like, I mean, what you're describing is a beautiful thing. Like, that's the dream of society, right? Like, how can you be in a place where everyone matters, where you can celebrate every aspect of your, you know, people's lives? Like, your, what is it? Your colleagues, your fellow people, your, you know, your community. We are so fractured.
Yeah.
And I know I am filled with yearning, right? I'm filled with questions and filled with this adventurer spirit, for lack of a better word. But, like, I'm seeking a lot of things, like, and this is sort of the purpose of this podcast. Like, I really want to know how people are taking care of themselves, like, where people go to heal and nourish and feel safe and feel good and feel like they can go out there in this crazy world and be whole and give back and all these things. And I mean, it sounds like the church is a great place. Like, that is where you see babies grow up and you celebrate with people and you can have all the feelings, and because you have this structure. But where else, like, I'm asking this genuinely, where else can that be? Because I know that organized religion for myself is a little frightening, a little something I am not interested in, or at least I tell myself I'm not. But how else could that happen? Like, where else could that happen?
I mean, in communes.
Okay, okay, okay.
And, like, at first, like, scary and dated as like the that, you know, that I mean, that word is so loaded now.
Yeah.
But like intentional communities, like,
okay,
that's what we're saying.
Okay.
Now, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the idea of like living in community with people of young and old, and like,
yeah,
you know, having structures to like see people regularly outside of like your nuclear family or, you know, your kind of age group.
Yeah. But it's something we would have to build. I mean, it mm-hmm. would not. There's, you know, there's an ease of religions or churches or synagogues. There's an ease, there's sort of a built-in community.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and quite honestly, I've, you know, I say that I have, but then again, like, my Saturday nights are kind of more important than my Sunday mornings right now. But I have, like, thought about, and in fact, when I lived in D.C. and the Unitarian Church was really near to me, I mm-hmm. went, and that was, like, that felt like the closest I've experienced to the church that I grew up in,
yeah,
in terms of like these, you know, these really interesting, thought-provoking talks that would use a piece of sacred text as sort of the jumping off point, like not all the time, but most
yeah.
of the time, and a place for, you know, people of all ages and kind of backgrounds to come together and singing as a group, which is really important. And I really enjoy, and there aren't many structures to do that either.
Yeah. No.
And so that was something that I like really enjoyed. So yeah, I mean, like, what church? Like, I mean, I don't know of anything like it, because living in a community is like also is its own thing. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's as I don't necessarily like need to live with these people, but it's important to me to like be able to see folks regularly.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, the nice thing about church is you also don't have to be at church all the time. Like in a
yeah.
commune, you're like, this is it. Like I'm in a, I guess maybe you go to work or maybe you, or I don't know. Like, I don't really know too much about how communes work, but I'm thinking, you know, the Divine House, it's a house, in Brooklyn. It's like maybe a 16 or no, it's like a 21 person cooperative
oh, wow. okay.
house, and it's huge. And you know, there's all these, rules. Elena, come in. Come in. Come in.
Welcome
come in.
To the cozy zone. Cozy zone.
Yeah, please take a picture.
I need to go away from my theater paper that's 3 months late.
Oh, you're going to be great. Just so everyone knows.
Hi.
Hi, Elena just walked in. Hi, you're actually the.
Are we gonna make out? What's happening?
No, we're
not
gonna
close.
Make it. Well, this was only one mic, right?
Okay. So. There are three people in my bed, so you know. Okay, all right.
All right, but this is your room.
Yes, this is my room.
Will you just point to, like, the coziest part of your room, for you?
The coziest part of my room is right where Dorna's sitting.
But under that red blanket, right?
Under the soft red blanket. Or maybe, yeah.
And can you point to your favorite object in the room?
My favorite object in the room is my sparkly unicorn horn.
They're really gorgeous.
My sweaty balls. I don't know.
I love those unicorn horns.
Too. You guys could put the one on.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah,
let's do
idea.
It. Thank you.
Thanks, Elena. You really added.
Of course. How was your day?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yes.
All right. Well,
elaborate more, but I have to write a paper.
Well, good luck.
Okay.
Enjoy the unicorn. I would love to do an episode with you someday.
Yeah, I want to do it on the F train.
Okay. In a little. You got it. Seat. We're gonna do it. That's very unbelievable.
Yeah.
And we're gonna do it though.
We're gonna do it.
All right. Good luck writing your paper. Thank you for letting us be here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Dorna has her horn on. I gotta
have my unicorn horn on.
I gotta put mine on. It's probably tea time.
It looks fantastic.
Thank you.
Yes, let's have our tea. Hibiscus lavender rose tea.
I'm like, hibiscus lavender rose from the Park Slope Food Co-op. Oh, yeah. You had your first shift today?
On Monday.
Monday. Excuse me. It's beautiful. It's like this sort of red pink, this sunset pink. Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, it smells amazing. Oh, and what incense? Well, the incense looks like it might have burned out. But what incense were you burning there?
Calm night.
Calm night. We're having that.
Sunset and then a calm night.
Calm night. All right, well, cheers.
Cheers. Right.
Oh, boy, intentional communities. Oh, boy. All right, here. So now that we have our tea, I want to say how we met for the first time, because it's very important. I was thinking about it a lot today in preparation for this. I don't know how exactly one prepares for the Cozy Zone, but, you know, I think about some questions, but this is one thing I definitely wanted to bring up. So we met on Governor's Island during this past summer's Figment, which is like a little Burning Man type art festival where everything is, the island is transformed with various participatory art projects. And my project was Smash Type. And it was an iteration of Smash Type called Smash Type Red Rover. And Smash Type, as I've mentioned before, is my living letterpress project where people take on one letter of the alphabet. They decide which letter they would like to be responsible for, which they love the best. And one letter at a time, they create messages collaboratively. And you and Elena rolled up like at the end of the day, and the prompt for the day was like, all right, so you got to write two words. They both have to start with the same letter, and they have to be funny. They have to make someone laugh. I love your unicorn horn a lot.
I love yours.
Thank you. And people came up with like Dastardly Donut and, you know, like Peter Pickle and, you know, funny words. They were funny. But I was over it at that point. And for somehow I prompted you to come up with this prompt. I guess I knew maybe you were both in education.
You asked us, like, what do you two have in common?
Okay.
Or what are you both passionate about?
Nice. Okay. Which is smart. I don't know how I did that,
but
that's what I did. The lavender is still echoing in my mouth. This is, and I said, if you could teach any class, what would
together,
what would the name of that class be?
Right. That was it. And so we started talking and let's see, Figment is in June?
Yeah.
Figment's in June.
Yeah.
So obviously this is, you know, almost a year after I'd quit my job to like follow my own passions.
Yeah.
And I was all about the self-love.
Yes.
And Elaine and I had both recently been involved in this like pretty intense seeing a friend of ours, now a friend of ours, who does this like pretty amazing intense like healing work. It's like I don't even know how to talk about it. Her like practice is called Be Wild Woman, and it's like how to feel at home in your body. It's like really interesting kind of all kinds of work. At any rate, so like both of us were sort of on this like, how do we take care of ourselves?
Yeah.
As we sort of take care of other people, which is the teaching thing.
Yeah.
And so we were like, oh, self-love, And then it was like, well, we're not really experts. How about Self-Love 101? So that was the name of the class.
That was the name of the class. Self-Love 101.
Self-Love 101. And then I don't know exactly how this happened, but that evening we decided to like go do a nice thing for ourselves. Went to Prospect Park, lit some candles, and had like a sunset picnic.
Oh.
And that felt like very self-lovey kind of
yeah.
thing to do.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there and kind of talking about our day and kind of realized that we actually could teach Self-Love 101. Kind of like, why not? Why not actually teach it? Because we can. And so we decided to do it. And the original idea was to have like four sessions where it's like first, like, how to like eat / like bring things into your body, how to like communicate, how to receive and give, like the balance of that, da, da, da. And then got simplified down to one. And then the day of, Elena realized it wouldn't be a loving thing for her to teach that day because she had so many other things going on. It was the end of the school year.
Oh yeah.
And so I decided to teach it on my own, and it was really hard.
you were saying, so it was a small gathering.
It was a small gathering of like people who I really respected,
yeah.
including this healer person who I had.
Be Wild Woman,
who like I have just so much respect for. And so it was like a high, I mean, on the one hand, it's sort of like I have complete freedom to teach only the things that I am passionate about. On the other hand, it's like, you know, I just felt a lot of pressure to like have it be really amazing.
Yeah.
And, I'm not sure. I mean, it's hard to, it's impossible to know like how it actually fell on them, but the experience of being the facilitator was very anxiety provoking.
Oh,
that
man.
Was like really, it was really interesting, especially because in my mind I'd sort of been like, you know, I was again a year after quitting my teaching job, I don't like it, but
well, all right. So what's a better word?
What's a better word?
A funny word, like a silly word. You squeaked it.
I squeaked
it. You
nixed it.
Nixoned it.
Nixoned it.
You dengue fevered it. You smote it. No.
Is smote?
Smote, like the
yeah,
biblical
totally.
Kill. But you waved. You bid farewell.
I bid farewell to my teaching job.
Yeah.
There we go.
That's okay.
More
yeah.
gentle.
With a little handkerchief.
Yeah, totally.
You know. You'll see it again. Maybe you'll
see it.
Who among us? Okay, my assumption. You sound, hearing you speak about, like, you sound like a caretaker, someone who
mm-hmm.
likes to help other people, like, take on the woes of other people and do what you can to help. Is this?
Yeah.
I am the same way. And something that I do is often it's at the detriment to my own
mm-hmm.
spirit, like,
mm-hmm.
and that's something I'm actively working on, like trying to protect myself, trying to do a little self-love. And I also believe that, like, if that's true, like, I mean, teaching is the ultimate sort of expression of caretaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that preparing someone to meet the world
mm-hmm.
better than they could before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a very beautiful act.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also something that is not only in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So my bias is, I guess, that you probably will always be teaching a little bit. I'm here, frankly, to learn from you, you know, to learn about the witchcraft of creating a cozy space here up in this attic treehouse. What was the third thing?
Oh.
Attic, treehouse, barn.
That's more the upstairs, though.
Right.
The
this is not.
Not so much.
This is not.
yeah. So it was interesting where I was like, before I taught Self-Love 101, I kind of, a year after bidding farewell to my formal teaching job, I was kind of curious if I was going to kind of teach formally in, you know, formally in some kind of setting
yeah.
ever again. And I thought, okay, well, here's an interesting scenario where I'm teaching only the things I want. I have complete freedom to teach whatever I want. And all the people in my class have decided to be there.
Yeah.
this should be an ideal teaching scenario, right?
Yeah.
And yes, it was. And it was also way more sort of like pressure. You know what I mean? So for instance, if you have the opposite of that, you're teaching something that you haven't decided to teach, but you're told you need to teach.
Right.
And you have students who are being on some level forced to be there.
Right.
If the lesson doesn't go that great and if the kids aren't involved, you know, or aren't very engaged, there are like a lot of there's a lot of other issues in between, like I didn't do a great job teaching, you know?
Right.
So this was like it was interesting. It was informative, but I definitely didn't enjoy it.
That is so interesting. And I am so honored that this, you know, artistic gesture that happened at Figment, you know, came about by the parameters of Smash Type actually mm-hmm. came to fruition.
Totally.
But it's intense and, you know, it's like, ooh, disheartening that it was so anxiety ridden.
Sure. I mean, and again, like originally I didn't actually have any interest in teaching it on my own. Like,
right.
I think it would have been really different to have Elena there.
Yeah.
Just because I think the balance of our personalities and just not feeling like it was all in me and,
yeah.
you know, not being able to sort of collect myself mid, like.
Yeah, well, you need a break. I mean, like, the team teaching model is very nice because you can take a moment to, like, rest while
exactly.
someone else, you know.
Takes over.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I think it would be interesting to do something similar again at some point with
yeah,
Elena and see.
You please let me know.
Okay.
Because, you know, and I imagine, I don't know, but I imagine the people who are there to support you as well. You know, like no one's like, all right,
yeah.
like, yeah, show me self-love. Yeah, try it. I don't love myself, so we'll see. But I imagine, I mean, we're all there for the same purpose.
Sure.
You know, that's like you enter with an intention, you enter with.
Yeah.
This, you know, like all we would want to do is help you out. Like,
sure.
You know, we're a warm audience.
Sure. Yeah.
Self-love.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it was just interesting. It was like all the sort of teaching, like, how much is me talking? How much mm-hmm. is you experiencing? How much is like, how much should I encourage you to write down the things
yeah.
I'm saying or only the things you like? And then if so, do I give you time to write it? Or are you kind of like, it was just like all of the. Every step of the way, I was like second guessing if I was like doing it right.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, which I guess is the experience.
Well,
of teaching
right. So, and you gotta, and you know, how do you prepare yourself to teach a class about self-love? Like, mm-hmm. I know I have so, I am so hard on myself. I don't know mm-hmm. if you are too, mm-hmm. but I am, and it's brutal. Like, it's like mm-hmm. I intellectually see myself, you know, doing things and being successful and doing right by people, but there is this like internal force inside me that I am trying to crack into in therapy that is just like, no, you're worthless, like this is no good, like mm. it's crappy. And like it's this real battle mm. that like can only be won, I believe, through self-love.
Yeah, it is, right? It's really interesting.
Yeah. Do you feel how is your, like, on a scale of from 1 to 10, how is your self-love?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I feel like I've sort of added it. It's like another voice but my kind of self-critic mm. is equally loud.
I see.
You know, it's just yeah. like another voice in there now that I've kind of cultivated.
Yeah, that's reassuring.
Doesn't seem to...
I find that reassuring.
So, like, for instance, recently, you know, on one of my kind of like pushes to kind of crack through the critic and start to like create more art, I signed up for an online songwriting course.
Awesome.
And managed to not do any of the lessons, but I did have like one sort of conversation with Elena, actually, who also signed up for it.
Awesome.
And actually did some work where we were like playing around with writing a song, and and it was just like all that I would like start to say a couple of like lines, and then like much louder than the little like meek voice in my head that's trying to create something was this like, "You suck."
Oh God.
So we were like, oh. So I was like, so like, then we were like, well, what if it's a duet? And like, I'm there like, walking down the street. And it's like, and just introduce the song with like, so I was taking a songwriting course. You know what they say, write what you know. So it would just be like, one of us like starting to sing a little ditty, and the other one being like, boo.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I am mustering up the courage to do some stand up comedy. Like that's like where all this is heading. Like this is God's plan, right? For me to do some stand up comedy, but I haven't yet. I'm doing the Artist's Way. I'm in week 3.
Nice.
It's going good. Doing my morning pages. But like, yeah, like that is the thing. Like, right? That like, more than someone external saying boo, like the loud critic in yourself. And like, how do you, I mean, it's really inspiring to hear what you're saying. Like, you embrace that critic, right? And you're just like, oh yeah, I see you asshole. Like, yeah, you come on up here with me. And like, then it doesn't matter. And you're stronger ultimately. I'm really happy to hear you're doing an online songwriting class. That's really great. What are your art forms?
That's a really good question. I don't have my phone on me right now, but whenever I have an idea, I write it down in the notes section of my iPhone.
Okay. Cyborg.
And right, exactly, my external memory drive. And there is everything there. Many, many of those things have not come to fruition.
You okay?
But I've been thinking today about ways to sort of force some like artificial forcing functions on my creative life. So like, for instance, I have like a series of like little stop motion videos that I want to do, one of which is currently in production. I have like some random, just like silly ideas for sort of portraits of food.
What food?
So like, I don't even know if I can. I I have this rule where I can't like talk too much about things before I make them.
You got it. Got it.
They're silly and fun, I think.
Can you dessert?
Produce.
Okay. And are they dressed up like Renaissance Madonnas?
No, but that's a great idea.
All right.
Like, I wish that had been mine.
It's yours. It's this is
so
yours.
Voluptuous, right? It was like commentary on like what's happened to the female form.
Oh yeah, Rubenesque.
Totally. Some squashes, baby.
Bok choy. Yeah. Squash. Ooh, yes, squashes. Totally. There were squashes in your office? Where did I see squashes? In your kitchen?
In the kitchen.
In your kitchen. That makes more sense.
I love squashes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Squash. And let's see. Just like some random sort of like online interventions.
Oh.
Some like immersive experiences. I knows no bounds. I just think it's important to like honor these little seedlings of ideas that come up, and even if they never get made, to like acknowledge that they're there and like make them on some level a little more concrete, and then see where they go.
I feel very, I resonate strongly with what you're saying. Like, you sound like an idea person. Like, you are not constrained by medium. Like,
no.
you are fueled by concepts is what
yes,
it sounds like,
exactly.
Which is extremely exciting. I love that. I don't identify necessarily as a very good drawer. But but all the other like film and stop motion but are you a painter? Do you paint?
So because I went to a Waldorf school, I spent some like serious time doing basically every kind of art form. Mm-hmm. Like I should say, not the kind of most recent, nothing with like technology, but yeah, painting, drawing. And so, well, I definitely am like, as compared to like the other kids in my class, I'm not skilled or gifted. Like I have a sort of like baseline of skills that like probably more than like your average human.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was flooded with excitement when you said Waldorf school. Who is it? Steiner? Rudolf Steiner?
Yep.
Okay. So he, I believe he has a belief about like the alphabet being from like sort of like the universe or like
yes.
a divine. And I forget the exact, there's like a, you like say vowel sounds. There's a alphabet thing that he has.
Eurythmy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That blew my mind when I heard about that for the first time. Tell me your relationship with Eurythmy.
Oh my God.
Please.
Okay.
Please.
So I didn't realize until after I graduated Waldorf school that part of Steiner's pedagogy, which is like Waldorf school method, is do not explain to the kids why they're doing what they're doing. Like, don't tell them the sort of like religious science or whatever he called it behind the pedagogy. Just do it. So
philosophonomy.
Like,
what did he had a name for it. I don't remember. I read one article. But
anthroposophy is like the name of like his whole like weird religion thing that like incorporates Waldorf school. And so for instance, Eurythmy is this thing that like, it just is amazing looking back, like how many things kids like won't question if it just seems like normal. Mm-hmm. So like Eurythmy was this thing that, I mean, to the untrained eye looks probably something like a dance.
Yes.
And that we did, you know, a couple of days a week, kindergarten through 12th grade. And like, it never occurred to me to question why we were doing this. It was just like something that was like that you did at school.
16 years of your life, 3 days a week. You practiced Eurythmy, basically. Well, 14.
Yeah. It's kind of intense.
That's a lot of Eurythmy.
That's a lot of Eurythmy. And so I still haven't like gone into depth, but what I've learned is, yeah, so there's some kind of curative potential there. And there's like this, each Steiner, I don't know if it was because of his like, living in the astral plane or whatever his experience was, or the fact that I think he might have been like had some kind of synesthesia, but like in his mind sounds had shapes that you could make with the human body.
Yep.
And so a lot of Eurythmy was like the teacher would be saying a poem and we would be like forming the sort of vowel and consonant shapes of the words with our bodies, and oftentimes like moving in some kind of like geometric shape like as a group, so like in like a star or like a six-pointed what's that called, hexagon,
yeah,
or like something like that in like a group.
Do you remember any sound shape you like Eurythmy moves?
Yeah.
Can you teach me a Eurythmy move?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's see, what do you like to know? Let's see, I'm trying to think.
How about, so what would smash type look like?
So I don't know exactly how the teacher decided which, obviously if you tried to like, you know, make every sound, that would be impossible. You would be speaking too slowly. So it was usually like one sound or maybe two sounds per word. So like an S, can I put down the microphone?
Yeah.
An S is like this.
Okay. So there's this sort of this beautiful, so you're making like double S's with your hands, basically. Yeah. Okay, S. So, yeah.
And then T is like this.
So it's like a ballerina touch on your head. Uh-huh. So you're like about to do a ballerina.
And P, we could do type. It's like this.
Okay, so that's very hard to explain.
Yeah,
it's sort of like an Egyptian, but it's your hands are mirrored. So it's like a sort of a martial art like crane. Your elbows are up.
So it's like, so this would be the P.
That's like P.
Type.
And it's P. So smash. So
type.
Oh my God.
You like that?
Yeah, I do. So what is the S again?
You could do it large, or you could do it small.
Okay, and is that about volume? Is that about
volume?
Okay. And it's like you're sort of cleaning a window in front of you, but you're making an S shape with you're making like a wave.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. And so you know, like the
most of the sounds.
The eurythmy.
It's like it's in me. It's there.
Unbelievable. Did you think we would be talking about eurythmy?
No, I didn't.
In your cozy zone? We haven't really given your cozy zone a lot of play. Like, we looked out the window. Elena came in. We're wearing unicorn horns. I have a question about the tea.
Okay.
So I drink it, right?
Mm-hmm. It's pretty good, huh? The lavender is, like, really present.
It's really good. So my tongue, there's like a bright, like, after sensation happening on my tongue.
Hmm.
Is that happening to you?
Yeah, I think so, now that you pointed out.
Do you know what that is, or, like, which element?
Maybe you're allergic to something.
No, no. Like,
is your tongue swelling?
No, no. It's like sort of a cooling. It's like, it's sort of this weird.
I don't know which element that would be.
So actually. Rose, lavender.
Hibiscus,
which gives it the sunset
color. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It is a really beautiful tea. It's a beautiful color.
It's really beautiful. Before we began, you were like, I asked you, so where do you want to be? And you're like, I have a lot of stories and memories in this room.
Mm.
But you were here for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at this tapestry behind you of these beautiful peacocks. Is that you, or is that Elena?
That's Elena. So
okay. Yeah. So what is you?
What's me is this bed.
Okay.
And the birch.
And the birch. The beautiful birch.
And these guys.
Okay. These are curtains. These are
orange.
Yeah.
So actually, this shape was inspired by an experience I had at Burning Man.
Did we talk about going to? I've been to Burning Man. When did you go to Burning Man?
2011.
I didn't go then.
Okay.
Wait. Which one? What was 2011? What was the theme?
Something?
Not evolution. No.
Why? That's really weird that I can't think of the theme.
Not American. There was American Dream, which might have been 2009.
Obviously, it
was 2008.
Memorable.
No, you're right. 2011, I have no idea what it was. And I was not there. I went 2008, 2009.
Mm, okay.
That's when I went.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an experience where I really wanted to cry.
Okay, I hear
you.
And
I was noticing that I was kind of like closing off my like wanting to just rage and be really upset.
Yep.
Because I was wanted to take care of the people around me.
This is my internal world. Uh-huh. I jive with this very much. Please go on.
So I was
on.
Like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get on my bicycle and just like ride out into the middle of nowhere until I can't see anyone else.
Yep.
And then I won't have to feel guilty about crying really loudly. And so I just start to ride out like past, you know, into deep playa
toward the trash fence.
Toward the trash fence.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the swirling dust emerges this like beautiful semicircle of these like raised, all white, but like raised sort of high beds with like this beautiful sort of shape and then these like long curtains fluttering in the breeze.
Okay.
It felt like my fantasy of what like, you know, like Mediterranean or like North African sort of like, if I were a princess and I wanted to go like have a day by the sea, that's what they would set up for me.
Yep.
And so there were just a bunch of them just out and there was no one else there. So it was like kind of like this. Also, you had to like a little hop to get up to this like tall kind of bed sofa place, white cushions and then the beautiful like white. So you had this sort of feeling of privacy too, like the curtains. And I had a good loud cry there. But this feeling of this sort of like the curtains coming down from this shape is definitely from that experience.
That's amazing.
So that is mine. And then this I made in high school, the stained glass.
Okay. So this is, it's a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And on the left there's blue and there's green and it looks like soldered lines.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like a lotus, and there's all these sort of interlocking, kind of leaf shapes in the, and also triangles,
mm-hmm.
and polygons. Mm-hmm. And it fades, so it begins sort of cool colors and it becomes warm colors. Is that clear glass on the right?
And it's a very light yellow.
Very light yellow. And some purples. I love the my favorite color in it is the one right next to the green toward the bottom. I guess the left bottom triangle. Oh. I love that. Cool. Yeah. You made it in high school.
Yeah. One of the many art. I mean, there's just you just learn how to do everything. It's kind of amazing. They had like a stained glass unit. And actually, I was really excited about the stained glass. And I like got I had this like really intricate piece. It was going to be really big. It was going to be a hummingbird and like this flower and this whole thing. And it's like when you make a piece of stained glass, you need to like think about because you can't have a very sort of deep curve. Otherwise, the glass will cut when you're scoring it. Mm. So you can't have something more than like a, you know, 30 degree curve or something.
Okay.
And so I'd like drawn it all out. And then it's like, then the next step is basically creating the pieces and like a sort of poster board or something that's thick enough that it's not going to like fall apart and cutting them all out into like a little puzzle, basically. So okay. You can like put it on top of the piece of glass and score it.
I see.
So I like, so I had it all template. Ready to go. And then my teacher was basically like, you're really far behind. You should just like ditch this and like start over with something with no more than like 12 pieces. You know, this thing had like 50 or 60 pieces.
Oh.
And I was so disappointed. And she was like, oh, well, you can just come in and work after school and, like, create this later. But, like, I need you to have something that I can get. They didn't grade, but they gave, like, a sort of, like, whatever, a written assessment of, like, your work or whatever by the end of the block. And
Steiner.
No. And so I made that, which I love. But I recently found the pieces of the hummingbird. And I was like, oh, man.
Oh.
I kind of want to make the hummingbird, too. But anyway.
Put in your phone.
It's funny. I have like a little done. Like feeling of like disappointment around that, but also I really like it.
Well, I imagine it catches that light.
Yeah,
really
it's beautiful
well.
in the daytime.
Dorn, I just noticed that you have toasts on your socks, which I really am in love with.
Yeah, my dear amazing friend Anna, who's a constant source of inspiration, amazing artist, sent me these friendship toast socks in the mail a few weeks ago.
So it's a dude peanut butter toast, uh-huh. looks like, and a lady jelly toast.
Yes.
And they're holding hands.
They're holding hands. They have little feet.
And it is super, super cute. Oh, man. You can tell. It seemed she's female presenting because there's a little bow.
Right. A little bow with the same color as the jelly.
Yeah.
All smeared all over her toast face.
Oh, yes.
And I think actually that's pretty much all of me that's in this room. Oh, that's not true. Actually, this also was a gift from Burning Man. Oops. That Elena has co-opted. I might have to steal back at some point. I met this amazing hippie at Burning Man who makes these inspiring phrases.
And I'm looking, is the box, I mean, it's in this.
So
this
my twin brother made that box.
Acrylic box.
Manifestation is empowered by clear intention.
Mm.
Remember who you are.
Listen.
You have everything you need to be here now.
Nice.
Right?
And this is Inspiration Campaign. You can visit the website at www.inspirationcampaign.com. And so.
There was a period of time when I was working on my self-love, where I was meditating on these cards. I was writing them. I was like giving, you know, like writing them in calligraphy and giving them as gifts. I was like, really, these cards were like a really big part of my life.
Yeah.
And as a gift that year for Christmas, my brother laser cut this box with like some of my favorite phrases on it. And I don't think he intended for it to fit the cards, but it just so happens that they fit perfectly in it.
So it's
a home for the cards.
And this is like, so it's this acrylic box, and I'm looking at, there's this heart hole in it, and around the heart hole is this gorgeous, oh boy, these swirls and these stars. What would you, I don't know if there's a better.
Like
curlicues, that's a good one. And there's like little hearts and little stars. It's sort of like paisley. And then on the faces of the box, our laser cut, what you believe becomes. There is potential joy in everything you do. Choose thoughts in the present moment that serve your highest good. That one's really nice. I resonate with that one. Trust that everything is happening perfectly.
Right.
That one's really important. You have all the time you need. Yikes. That one's... I hope so. There's potential joy in everything you do. I might have said that. I think that's it. That's really good. And yeah, and as you mentioned, all of these inspiration campaign cards fit in the heart hole, which is not a void. It's a porthole to abundance.
Yeah.
God, that's awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Just one of those magical things. And you're like, oh, my life is totally magical.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there probably are like a few other little things around that I've like left, but for the most part, like everything else is Alina.
Lots of
beautiful things she's added.
Yeah, it's really, really wonderful. I see there's this post-it note and beautiful calligraphy that says wallet, cell phone, keys.
So that I made for Alina.
Very good.
I'm the resident calligrapher of the house.
Aha.
So you'll see it like everywhere. Instead of like having a like, put your dishes away, I'll be like, I try to make nice. So like,
what a nice roommate. Such a nice roommate. Oh, man. And it's so nice that we can be here. And what Alina has done is a gift. It's a gift to this space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Which is so, I don't know, unique. I'm finicky about space, and you know, it's unique that you can let someone in, I mean, to your cozy zone, and trust that they will nourish it more and keep it. And as you were saying, like, that you lucked out that she was moving out of her bigger room and downsizing and could find a home here.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, I'm curious about, like, what you hope to gain, uncover by, you know, experiencing learning more about other people's cozy zones.
Well, I'll tell you. So, it's a bit of a rush, I think. I find it a bit of a rush to gain access to secret places. Like, I think that like, I realized that like how much I get a kick out of access. You know, thinking about so Alina and I were in the Supplied Theater program, this grad program, and a lot of it is doing theater in non-traditional spaces like prisons and community centers and things like that. And what sort of a huge thing that I got out of that is reading about artists who, under the banner of art, get to go to these places that people don't usually go, like refugee camps and prisons, just like closed places. And I did my thesis in a domestic violence shelter. Like, I don't get to go to a domestic violence shelter like any, you know, any just because, you know, you can't just waltz in to a domestic violence shelter. Like, and I mean, I had to do like a 40-hour training. It wasn't an easy thing. But ultimately, because of the intention I set, I got to go there. And it is so magical. I think that is so interesting. And I just feel like it is such a rich experience. So that's one. So it's sort of, it's a rush, sort of in a visceral way. And also what I was saying before is I'm doing a lot of seeking and a lot of thinking about self-care and thinking about living a sustainable life, especially in a place that I find as challenging as New York City. I'm not a native New Yorker, but I've been here since undergrad, so it's going on 11 years. And I'm still here and still, you know, pretty sane and, you know, alive and kicking and gainfully employed and have a nice house and that kind of thing. But there is so much negative energy that is swirling around this city And there's just, I mean, there's so many people and we're so cramped. And to learn about how other people, I don't know, create like a safe haven for themselves is really interesting and something I really like. And also, like, something I've been thinking about is, so the original Cozy Zone was my dad and I would, like, take a pillow out of our, like, hard couch and snuggle next to each other when I was growing up and, like, put an Afghan over us and watch Ren and Stimpy. And so it was, like, this really, like, close contact and, you know, this uncomfortable couch was sort of made comfortable by my dad's presence. And it was just this sort of feeling of, like, sinking in and just, like, letting everything wash over you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it was such a nourishing feeling, and it's sort of that something I'm chasing also. It's like that nirvana that I'm hoping to find again. Like, how can you find a place where you can just be yourself? And, like, how can you strive to be yourself with a microphone, holding a microphone with, like, someone else, you know? Is that possible? Mm. And I also get a kick out of the idea of using the limited power of audio to paint a space. Like, how do you capture a space, like something that's very visual and sensory, like hearing the little, you know, moan of your radiator and smelling someone cooking dinner downstairs and the tea. Like, it is such an imperfect form. Like, speaking and audio, like, in words and language is such an imperfect thing, but I love it so much, and I feel the most comfortable working in language and text. And there's something delightful about that paradox or tension between sort of this whole experience, this full body multi-sensory experience with the limited form of audio. So
cool.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, I'm thinking that we might move into our final thing.
Okay.
That we do at Cozy Zone.
What's that?
So there's a the final ritual, we've done it each time.
Okay.
It's a thought experiment. Right. So we have just been, Dorna Lang and Ben Weber have just been granted an unlimited amount of money to create an art project together. The only stipulation is it has to be collaborative.
Okay.
We have to do it together. Both our names have to be on it. We get equal recognition and we have to have equal sort of stake in it. Mm. What do we do?
Okay.
And so we got to, now we got to figure it out. So that's the game. We got to figure out our, right now.
Okay. We have unlimited funds.
Unlimited funds.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The challenge, the challenge I think is you like working in a lot of different art forms. Mm. And I like working in a lot of different art forms. But something that's called out to me, because obviously I know what I was going to ask you this question, but something that I think might be useful is something to do with calligraphy.
Okay.
Like, calligraphy, that was like a really exciting thing. Mm. Knowing that eurythmy is part of your skill set is also very exciting. I'm not sure, you know, that's I'm just saying, I don't know, maybe you want to leave the eurythmy world behind.
No, I think, so you just said you're very textual.
Yeah.
And I like to do calligraphy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think words are really powerful.
Yeah.
Duh.
Well.
So some kind of, like, immersive experience.
I love it.
Where people feel taken care of on some level and have some sensory delight.
Yes.
And some integration of, like, beautifully presented or beautiful. So, like, for instance, one project that I want to do that I haven't done because I haven't figured out how to make it properly, like how to have other people experience the value in it.
Yeah.
Would be to have, like, I've gone to parties before and brought that box mm-hmm. and had people either pick a phrase or tell me one of their favorite inspirational phrases mm-hmm. and like calligraphed it for them as a gift.
Wow.
So like wanting to do that in a public place somewhere.
Okay, so gift giving and sensory delight and being taken care of, I'm hearing, and are crucial.
Yeah.
Okay, so what? So let's sort of drill into the sensory delights, like what that might actually look like. I'm making an assumption that you are a fan of sumptuous textiles.
Yes.
And I wonder, like, and I know that I am in the market for like the feeling of being like swaddled.
Yeah,
like that's something like right now, like today, like if I was swaddled in like sumptuous fabric, I would be
great.
Anything else, like you could do anything else, and I'd be like, great, thank you.
Okay.
So maybe we got to wrap people. I would like that. I'm gonna put that out on the table.
Wrap, like actually cocoon them.
Yeah, you know, not you know, okay. They can move. But,
sure.
But like, in
what
a,
about one yeah. of like what about like a sort of like kind of Turkish like lounge feeling
yep.
space.
Yep.
Where there's like beautiful big pillows and
yep.
like yummy fabric.
Are we indoors or outdoors?
Honestly, the image in my head is this. I don't remember the name of this camp, but it's like a Burning Man camp, and like their offering is this, like beautiful sort of open air tent, and like all of these beautiful fabric pillows and these low tables, and they just come around with like little bits of tea and then this like Turkish delight.
Are they from
and, like,
LA?
These folks are from somewhere near Philadelphia.
All right.
And then like just every like it feels like they're just there to cater to your every need, like
great.
A million different kinds of like infused beautiful alcohol treats
okay.
to bring around hookah.
Okay. Okay.
So like maybe not the hookah but it's like or
maybe.
But like so it's like people who are like coming and checking in on you,
yeah.
making sure you're like oh fans if you're not the right temperature.
Yes. Yeah.
Like
so there's
very,
you need to regulate what you need. So the open air tent is exciting to me.
Okay.
So it's outdoors, but there's like a shade structure, right? So this is okay. And where in the world does this take place?
So when you're talking about the cozy zone, I have a friend, Nathan Austin. You may know.
I don't know.
He's kind of internet famous.
Okay.
I just
gotta look him up.
One of his projects that I had the like incredible blessing to be invited along to was something called the Night Heron Speakeasy.
Night Heron.
That was a a speakeasy in a water tower in Chelsea.
Does he go by initials?
ND, yeah.
ND, I do know him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know his name was. I knew him, ND Austin.
Mm-hmm.
He would probably do the podcast. He did a talk with Elastic City this past summer about like his practice, which is making speakeasies in...
Or anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or surprising.
Yes.
Spaces.
Yes.
So that was the element of surprise there, where it's like you're going through this abandoned building and then you see this water tower and you're walking up this rickety ladder and everything's very like industrial and falling apart. And then the trap door opens and it's like this beautiful, warm, sumptuous, like everything is like candle lit and there's a band and there's like beautiful drinks. It's like that the element of surprise there is kind of wonderful.
Yes.
So like it'd be one thing if you're going through a gorgeous wood and then there's like a gorgeous tent.
Right.
But something about like it being somewhere where it's like you're like not expecting it's kind of gross. And then all of a sudden this beautiful thing opens up for you.
I don't want it to be on the playa. Say that.
Yeah.
But okay, so do you want to stay local? Do you want to be in New York City or is there a different gross place? Like, I also love that contrast.
What if it were like, I mean, that was so stinky though. God, I was thinking like, what if it's like in one of those like kind of industrial areas, like near, you know, near Sheepshead Bay or whatever.
Oh, I don't
so
even,
stinky.
I haven't even been down there.
Like, I think there's something like a new, we live on the water.
Yeah.
And like, there are some beautiful parts of the water. Like
yeah.
The restore, you know, like
yeah.
this new Brooklyn Bridge Park.
Area. Yeah.
But there's a lot where it's like, I mean, just crumble it. And it's like we have the liberty of being on the water. But yeah, I think there's some potential for like some like crumbling pier, some neighborhood of like somewhere.
A South Brooklyn like maritime, like kind of gross maritime area.
Yeah.
It's not too stinky.
Right,
but,
not too stinky.
But maybe because
but wouldn't that be cool?
We have a lot of money, so we could probably do something about. Oops, we could. I hit my unicorn horn. We could do something about the air. Like if it was stinky, we could probably have like filters. You know what I mean? We could like. So it wouldn't matter. What I'm saying is, for our project, it wouldn't matter how stinky it was. We don't need to say
right.
no.
Okay.
So like we can figure out.
Okay.
We'll talk to our engineers. About
I kind of like that because I remember I was talking about how like if I were like this princess and I wanted to go to my
yes.
beautiful
yes.
palace
yes.
on the sea
yes
so it's like
they would
it's
set...
like the palace on the sea
yeah.
but it's like the reveal is like you're going through some like gross industrial park
great.
And there's this beautiful
great and so
okay.
you find this tent and the air is scented and beautiful and it's completely different from the disgusting industrial decay that's around
exactly.
you
yeah.
and you go in and immediately you are given maybe like a changing curtain. Like
great.
You have to remove all your clothes
uh-huh.
and
great.
To be then swaddled in
something
like a
sumptuous.
Something sumptuous. That's tricky. It's tricky. Like people obviously have different relationships with nudity and like having strangers swaddle their naked body in sumptuous cloth. Help me problem solve that.
Okay.
I guess is it just a matter of like asking like would you like
I think it could be some kind of like you know basically like prepare for like or whatever invitation could be something like prepare for spa day like
mm-hmm.
you know wear a swimsuit or something like that
okay.
and then people are like ready to get mostly naked
but like ideally it's completely naked
but
people have, you know, you gotta.
Yeah, I mean, I think that can be an invitation.
Sure,
I don't think if we pressure people to get naked,
yeah.
that's not the point.
That's not
part of the
no,
cozy.
No, that's
zone.
Not the point. That's not the point. And this also doesn't necessarily need to be cozy, but yes, this. I mean, I think we both want
sure.
this to be people to feel safe
feel
and taken
safe.
Care of.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so they're swaddled in. So they this is their new garb
yes.
for this space.
Here they are.
What else do they get? Like, what is the experience?
Okay, so
there's
I think
text.
I mean, I think like for me, I just want to like go through my checklist of like all of the senses, right?
Okay.
So like,
okay.
we need it to smell good. We
okay.
already have that.
No problem. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We need it
and
to like look good.
Yeah.
Right?
Can we think about? Do you have a like a spectrum, like a scent spectrum of like what you would want? Would it be floral, citrus? You know, is there a type of?
Yeah, I think sort of like. Cinnamon, like spicy.
Okay, so
here's foreign.
We are coming up against a problem here. So cinnamon, I have a very tenuous
really?
Relationship with cinnamon.
Tell
so the thing that I hate most of all is like artificial.
Oh yeah,
cinnamon.
That's the worst.
Candy or gum.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Okay, but you're speaking of like.
I'm talking like.
If we
beautiful
could,
spice.
Yeah. Maybe
like,
a little clove if we could add a little,
yeah,
if we could do some cloves with the cinnamon.
I just said cinnamon like because it made me think
it
of like
warm,
far away land.
And like
warms.
Some anise.
Yeah,
but,
sounds great.
But, all right, but just okay, good.
Yeah.
So we'll be okay.
Yeah. We want like natural. We don't want like fake smelly
great.
Stuff.
Great,
no.
great.
A little Febreze in there.
Yeah.
okay, so we have our sights, our smells. We need to have our like. Trays of delicious
yes.
treats.
Okay.
Right. That's
yeah.
taste. What am I missing? Hearing.
Hearing.
So do we want to have live music? Do we want to have...
Probably. I would love some singing. Like,
okay.
I would love, like, a choir.
Okay.
Kind of thing. I would love, like, a choir. I'm picturing a choir because... It's very portable,
mm-hmm.
and you don't need a lot of. And so, and I'm picturing like a group, like a small chamber choir, enveloping the person
mm-hmm.
as they're like, you know, like a mariachi band, except
oh my God,
so much
amazing.
Better, right? But as their own personal like surround
mm.
performance of some gorgeous a cappella something.
Mm.
That I would love that personally.
Okay, cool.
Is that how does yeah, that sound? Any
totally.
Do you need some instruments? Are there? Does it feel like?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have a hard time like actually thinking of what that would look like, but I think the possibility is like there for that to be super awesome.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you, I'm also open. We have a big budget, so if we want to add some other kinds of instruments, that's cool. I just would want to know what you were thinking.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, I mean, we can have this time where it's like, oh, I'm in this experience right now. Like, there is music happening. Like, people are making music right here.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
But then, like, potentially, depending how long people are going to be there, that might be nice to have something that's a little, like, less, like, all-encompassing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
More, like, background music.
Yeah, like, maybe.
Like, harp.
Mm, harp is fun. Harp, nice. Harpsichord.
Harpsichord. I like harpsichords.
Okay. Good. Let's get one. Let's get one. Harp,
can we
harpsichord.
Have it like floating on a little like floating stage?
Yes. And floating like on water?
Yeah, yeah. Like in the sea.
Yes. That's a great idea. That's okay. So music barges.
Oh my God.
Right? Like there have to be like boat-based sound
totally.
Things. Yep.
I think actually that'd be kind of amazing if you had like, I'm just picturing like one canoe with like a beautiful woman singing and like two men like rowing her along. And so you like, you're not really hearing it, and then you're hearing it. And then all of a sudden she comes into sight.
Oh yeah.
She's like singing this aria and oh, then, like, passes on.
That would be lovely.
Doesn't that sound wonderful?
That's wonderful.
Okay, great. So maybe like the music kind of passes by on like different kinds of floating.
Yeah. And say, and the hors d'oeuvres are passed, and there are also musicians closer who are cycling. So we have sight. Well, we don't actually have
all
a lot of
musicians
sight.
Musicians are in motion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. And some kind of
yeah, they could be walking. I mean, there would be some in
the marching band?
Maybe. It's a bit much. I mean, for me, like, if there's big bass drums and, like, brass.
No, not so much. Maybe, like, the grand finale ushering people out is a marching
band.
It's kind of fun.
I'll
sort of, like, end of the party, like, hoopla.
Perfect.
Great.
Perfect. What are we looking at? I mean, we're looking at these structures and we're looking at each other.
Right. Well, there's something with calligraphy, right?
All right. There's the text.
So, like, what if we have some, like, some of, I mean, I don't know if these quotes in particular, but, like, some, like, you know, kind of, like, mantras, not to be too.
No.
Whatever. But there's some, like, I think, right? I mean, my experience is that a lot of the ways that I think about the world and I think about myself are, like, on some level constructed out of words, right? And
yeah.
So there's it seems like there's the potential for like positive words to like enter even subconsciously and like create structure, like positive structure. So like I don't know what that would look like exactly, but like wouldn't it be interesting to like have some kinds of like something around. I don't know.
Yes. Yes. So I'm imagining. So I'm the question that is on my mind is like, what is the physical manifestation of these important bits of text? Like, are they on a scroll? Are they handed? I'm picturing like live written, like in close.
I just had an idea.
Please.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Imagine if the experience for the person coming was that like, every utterance was of utmost importance. And so you had like this person dressed, and I'm not sure exactly how, but this someone who looks important, who has like a beautiful quill and like a parchment, and like any word that they say, they're like attentively down.
So everyone has a scribe, right? Everyone has a personal scribe.
Everyone has a personal scribe.
And like an ancient, that's it.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay. Cause, and like, what if the scribes have to be like, have extraordinary penmanship?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. And then that happens. And, you know, everyone that can only go on for so long, right? Because those poor
scribes are gonna get exhausted.
Yeah. And you'll probably have a few cycling in, you know.
Sure.
And it's New York City, so we'll probably have to have different languages and
sure.
You know. And then the marching band leaves them out. They can put their clothes back on, back into stinky Sheepshead Bay.
Okay.
Right. What is this called? That's the final thing. So the experience, in order to like sort of write up the proposal,
Great.
We need like a project name.
Okay.
This is hard.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just going to start it off with like mere words. I'm just, this is just to start us. Okay. This is a bad idea for the beginning.
Mere words.
Mere words. I don't want to end with mere. Scribe. Inscribe, describe. Dictation now. And it's like, you know, you're in this, you're in a tent, there's music. Scribe.
I like scribe. Something with scribe. Like a scribe.
A scribe. A scribe, describe, be scribe. I'm going through the alphabet. See scribe.
What is like the name for like a, what is like an exotic name for like a tent? Like
a pavilion, a yurt, scribe pavilion. Pavilion is, I don't know if I can get behind pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
Camp, Bedouin, E scribe, G scribe, F, a scribe.
Yeah.
Scribe sense. My scribe. Sort of like my space.
Yeah, my scribe.
My scribe. It's a little.
It's a little heavy.
A little much.
A little mini vowel.
We scribe. No. Our scribe. Sheep's Head Bay scribe. Canoe. Tent. Harp. Harpsichord.
Harpsichord.
Harpsichord. Sumptuous scribe. Scribe venture, calligraphic, darn, this one is super hard. And also, like, I wonder if it's something little less on the nose,
okay.
Like Laos. I wonder if it's in, so we've just gone into these inspiration campaigns. So success is about the joy you feel, allow space for it. Wisdom is the integration of knowledge and humility. Love is the. This is pretty good. I would be okay with that one. I would give yourself that one. That one's good. I think. What is now? Reality. Give yourself permission is pretty good. Truth is simple. I like. You are God also. That's pretty good.
Huh.
You are God also because, yeah. So you think about the word of God
kind of amazing.
being
written. Okay, great.
You are God also.
Great.
A you project
also.
By Dorna Lang and Ben Weber. Great.
Great. Sold.
Perfect. You are God also. Dorna. Thank you much for inviting me into your cozy zone.
This is fantastic.
I'm so honored and grateful. and I look forward to the fourth time we meet.
Great.
great. Any last thoughts?
No, except that I kind of want to make this You Are God also now.
Yeah. Yeah.
point of brainstorming this?
Pin your phone. I mean, we've done it. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I would love to make all of these. Mm. Why not? I don't know. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. I mean, the only problem is we don't have unlimited funds. That's the only.
That's the only constraint.
But, I mean, we couldn't have probably all of the harps.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. Put in your phone.
Yeah, I'll put it in
my phone. Keep talking about it.
Great.
And maybe, you know, maybe, because you know how lucrative podcasts are.
So
maybe
lucrative.
The podcast bucks will roll in and I'll get to make all of them. That's the dream. I would love to. I would love to make You Are God also. That's a beautiful, it's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Cool.
We'll talk.
Great. We'll talk. Thank you so much.
Yeah. We are intimately finding our peaceful, cozy zone. And Ben, he interviews friends. It's awkward and then it's cozy zone. Occasionally it's a lovely thing to be nosy in somebody's cozy zone. So please snuggle up sweet. A beautiful thing, it's cozy zone.